Hello, welcome to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast, your weekly insight into the world of Formula One.
Thank you for listening to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast. I'm your host, Will, and as ever, I'm joined by the editor of the Grand Prix 24/7 website, Ben Stevens, and editor-in-chief, Paul Velasco. Today, we're just going to have a quick rundown of some of the news that's been floating around in the world of Formula One, starting with the announcement that the Vietnam Grand Prix for 2020 is officially being cancelled. Ben, what do you make of this news? I think it's not necessarily that big of a surprise.
Yeah, well, you could argue whether it's even news in the first place. I think everyone knew this was coming and even assumed it was coming. So this is sort of just confirming what we all knew, really. They'd obviously, F1 had already put out, the calendar's been set now for, about a month and a half, and there was no Vietnam on it. So I think this is definitely more a case of the Vietnamese organisers finally thrown in the towel, and maybe that took some time for them to organize how they were going to reimburse ticket holders or something like that. And I guess they've got that sorted out now, one way or the other. And that's why we're getting the news when we are.
Yeah, Paul, I mean, it's not the only Grand Prix that we will have lost this season, and not the only new one as well, because we also lost, unfortunately, the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort. But do you think that Formula One have kind of made the right decision in formalizing the calendar that we have at 17 races?
I don't think there was a choice. You know, I think they had to go with what they had. And basically, regarding the Vietnam Grand Prix, exactly what Ben said. I mean, you know, it was not really big news. It was expected. It's a shame. I mean, I think that's a story for in itself. You know, at the same time, although I would have loved to see Zandvoort back, we did get Mugello, and I think we're in for a treat with Imola and Portimão coming up. So, yeah, it's a double-edged sword. You know, it's like, yes, it's disappointing, but at the same time, it is what it is. You know, we just got to take it on the chin.
Yeah, I think that's a good point in that we kind of had this desire for new circuits on the calendar being a bit satiated by the fact that we have gone back to the Nürburgring and we're going back to Imola and we're kind of racing at Mugello and Portimão for the first time. So, but it does bring up an interesting discussion, Ben, about just the number of circuits that we've now got as potential locations for a Grand Prix and potentially, you know, is there scope for, you know, maybe doing a bit more of a rotation going forward?
I would like to think so. I'm not getting my hopes up because a lot of the locations we've lost, regardless of whether they're fan favourites or not, there's a fair bit of money behind them. China, Azerbaijan, you know, those sort of places. So that sort of concerns me, but this is a idea that's been floating around the past few weeks with the idea of invitational Grand Prix. You know, maybe if it's normally a 22 race season, maybe two of them could be agreed to be rotated. So you wouldn't get, say, Mugello every year, but you might get it once every 3 years or something like that. But it's obviously tough. It's tough for us as fans to get a taste of these circuits that are real racing circuits, and then to know that because money talks, we're probably going to lose them, at least as a regular fixture on the calendar when places like Baku come back.
I'd go sort of what Ben says, but I'd go a bit more conservative or radical, depending which side of the fence you're on. I would say have 16 like Grand Slam Grand Prix, like the big deals, the top ones that have always been the traditionalists, let's call it, and then have like six, so it's a 22 race season, and have six rotationals where you'd have, you know, this kind of like what Ben was suggesting, that, you know, people lobby, it becomes like a host city, a bit like an Olympics thing, and make a bit of a song and dance of it. Extra six track, and there's another day of media coverage for them when they decide the tracks. I think that would be a cool addition, you know. I think it would be really cool, and then sort of pepper them along the season. So you have the Spas, the Monzas, the Barcelonas, the Silverstones, Montreal, you know, Cota, whatever, Interlagos. You know, those are the Grand Slams, and then you have these other events plugged in. That's what I would probably do.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see which way Formula One are going. Unfortunately, I can see them going towards the more kind of 25 races a year kind of route, and trying really just to kind of max out their money and earnings potential, because you know, the more races, the more fans, the more TV rights. But I do like the idea of, as you say, like a shorter season with a bit more of a rotation.
I'm not arguing about a shorter season, to be honest. I like more, if they're going to bring us more races, let's bring it. Let's be honest, these guys do no driving whatsoever, you know, these days. Yeah, they got 20 Grand Prix, but they never test. You know, they're playing video games all the time. So yeah, make them do more races, man. I'm fully for that. When they were doing 16 races a season, you got to remember, in between the races, especially during the European season, they would spend 3 or 4 days a week, midweek, testing at Estoril or Jerez, or not so much Barcelona in those days. But you know what I'm saying? It's drivers were driving a lot. These days, they drive 23 or 24 times a year for three hours. I mean, how much time they spend in a car? So I would say, no, I don't think that's the issue. You know, if they want to have more grounds, if they want 30, let's have 30. I don't care. But the reality is, you know, you don't want to also oversaturate, you know, so it's a balance, I'd say.
Yeah, it's certainly important to try and find that balance. So I think NASCAR is definitely a motor racing series that is kind of oversaturated. And
I think 30 is an exaggeration, right, Ben? 30 is too many. But if you have 24, 25, I don't think it's you know, the cars don't break down anymore. Why are they sitting around? Let's race them, you know. I mean, the drivers, yeah, Ben.
I hear what you're saying. This is sort of my personal preference is like, and it's weird because I wasn't actually following the sport much when it was back when it was 16 races and stuff like that, but I actually do kind of like the idea of less is more, just from the perspective of it's never going to happen. Let's make that clear off the top. They're never going to go back to 16 races. But if it was, I like the idea that, you know, it actually, you know, every race just counts that bit more towards both the championship and in terms of you know, the history books in general. Because, and that's one of the, as much as there's all these sort of, you know, nonsensical things going around with Hamilton's record, that's one of the very legitimate critiques to make, is that he's just had so many more races than Schumacher has, or the greats going back ages, to sort of rack up those records, that I think, you know, I don't like that being diluted too much.
I think that's a nice segue into our next discussion. And obviously, having earned his 91st victory in Formula One during the Eiffel Grand Prix last Sunday, there has been a lot of chatter about Lewis Hamilton, his kind of place in history, and whether he is kind of the greatest of all time. Obviously, Jackie Stewart is one person who's kind of caused some headlines with regards to that topic, saying that he doesn't consider Hamilton kind of among the greatest, two or three drivers ever. Paul, I'll go to you first. What do you just make of this kind of like endless debate among fans about who is the greatest driver ever? And also just a look at kind of Jackie Stewart's comments and whether you agree with them or whether you think he's being unfair.
The greatest of all time, you can't single one person out. It's impossible. Let's look at the sport when it started, okay? Fangio, Mercedes, boom, 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 three, 4 hour races, cars where every Grand Prix, there were like 6 or 7 or 8, guaranteed someone died or hurt themselves. As a result, you didn't have young drivers, okay? Because it was like sending a kid to war. You go drive race cars, you die. It was what happened in those days. Many, many drivers died. So I ask this question, would even 50% of the grid still consider racing if racing meant that you could die? That was the reality of those days. It's not like that anymore. Formula One now is totally different. It's safer. It's much safer. It's never going to be safe from death. So therefore, is it still attracting those kind of fighter pilot heroes, kamikaze guys who didn't mind dying? Or is it attracting a sportsman of a different ilk? So you just cannot compare Lewis Hamilton to Fangio. You can't compare Lewis Hamilton to Jackie Stewart. You can compare them to the drivers of their eras, you know? And I'd say an era would be a dozen years, maybe 10 to a dozen years. So that's my thought on it. You know, you just cannot compare, it's like apples and pears, you know?
No, but I think that's a very good point. And I actually wrote a piece on the website this week kind of talking about why I think these debates are a bit silly, and especially in Formula One with all the things that go with it, you know, the arguments about car superiority and eras and the different number of races per season. I just think it's impossible and just a bit of a waste of time and something that just seems to aggravate people to kind of endlessly debating it. I think one thing that with Hamilton that is clear is that, you know, over the number of teammates he's had, he's always been quicker. He was quicker than Bottas. He was quicker than Rosberg. He was quicker than Button. He was quicker than Kovalainen. And you know, in one season, he was actually quicker than Fernando Alonso. So I don't see how anyone can underestimate that he is not an incredibly fast driver who, you know, went toe-to-toe with Vettel when Vettel was in a Ferrari and pretty similar machinery and beat him pretty handsomely twice. So he's obviously a very polarizing figure, but I don't think that it can be beyond doubt that he's an incredibly talented driver and one of the best of his generation. You know, I'm not going to sit here and debate whether he's better than Verstappen or better than Alonso, because there's not really any way of telling that. And one thing that's for certain is that he's one of the best of this generation and likely one of the best ever, but there's no real way of comparing that, because if you compare it back to the 50s, it's almost an entirely different sport. With regards to the comments from Jackie Stewart, I think that it's difficult because there's no reason that Jackie Stewart has to rate Hamilton among his favourite three drivers ever or his the best three drivers ever. Like, of course he doesn't have to. And there are plenty of drivers who can lay claim to that honour. But I just think it's another example of him just being a bit of an antagonist, perhaps. But Ben, where do you kind of stand on the debate for greatest of all time, or even whether there should be a debate at all?
Well, yeah, there's a few things I feel about this. The first is that in terms of what Jackie's saying, and I think you touched on this in your piece, is that there's definitely, across basically every sport, there's a case of the, you know, previous generation saying, well, you know, not necessarily always knocking the current era, but playing up their own era. So that's, and I think that's what Jackie's sort of doing here, where he's saying, you know, it's the Jim Clarks and stuff, like our era is sort of, you know, but and that's all understandable that he would sort of, you know, put his era first because that's the era he drove in. And I think it's just human nature to sort of, you know, want your legacy respected. And the fact is that this is just how the world is as well, as, you know, the younger generations, time passes, there's always something bigger and better, and the memories do fade to a degree. So when someone comes along and asks Jackie, you know, what do you think of Lewis Hamilton? That's a chance for him to remind people, and a lot of people, especially these days, might not really know much about what it was like or who were the names back in his day. You know, he gets a chance to talk himself and his generation back up. So I do get it from that perspective that he would sort of keep Hamilton out of his top three. At the same time, as you guys are saying, like, the GOAT debate in general is just, and I think F1 more than almost any other sport. I'm trying to think off the top of my head what sport I think would be harder to make a GOAT debate across eras, because the technology is so obviously different. That really complicates things. And yeah, as you also said in your piece, another thing you said, Will, was, you know, basically we shouldn't have it. We can't really have this at all. And generally speaking, I agree. I think if you're sitting there talking with a mate, and, you know, you're in a pub, whatever, having a drink, you might start talking about who your favorite driver is of all time. But I think talking about who your favorite driver is fine. But when you get on the internet and you're talking with strangers and things get a bit nasty and it doesn't become favorite, it becomes, oh, this person is definitively better. That's when you run into problems you can't resolve. And in that respect, it's better to just say, no, there's separate errors. You've got to sort of acknowledge that fact. What Lewis is doing is great, but how that compares to Fangio or even Senna, you know, Michael in the 90s, the 2000s even, like, we just don't know. And that's at the end of the day, the truth of the matter. We don't know.
That's the kind of overriding feeling I get from it. And obviously, as I've referenced, you know, Hamilton is a divisive figure. There are a lot of people who don't like him and they're, you know, wanting to take shots at him kind of when he's on top and bring him down a peg. But I just like to see a bit more respect in general among, you know, motorsport fans and also motorsport, you know, luminaries and figures from the past, just about, you know, the quality of some of these drivers who ride at the top level. And I think that's sometimes lacking. Paul, do you want to have the kind of last word on this?
Well, you know, with Sir Jackie Stewart, you know, let's be honest. We're talking about this man from a perspective of he's part of our family, right? This is the king. This is the guy, you know, three-time world champion when no one was ever going to win three world champions because you didn't live long enough. For me personally, 1973 was the year that I started following Formula One religiously. And that was the year that, it was a very dramatic year, actually, when many people died that year. Many. It sort of maybe hardened me to this whole sport, is that 73 was just a horrible year. And Jackie won that year, and he retired on his 99th Grand Prix because his friend Francois Sauvert was killed at Watkins Glen. You know, I mean, my heart just bleeds for Jackie and all the guys he knows and everything. So he's allowed to say whatever he wants. And that Lewis takes umbrage or whatever, you know, so be it. And, you know, I think it's a bit unfair because Sir Jackie Stewart is now 81, I believe. And when media would need a story, they'd probably just pick him up and say, hey, so Jackie, what about this and Lewis? And Jackie says it as he calls it. Because I will refer to one thing. That interview that we posted that's on one of my inside lines with Sir Jackie, he wasn't Sir then, but he was interviewing Ayrton Senna. And I was an Ayrton Senna fan, so I took offense. But Jackie did an unbelievable job. He stitched Senna up big time. You know what I mean? He really asked questions that no journalist, maybe Martin Brundle, would have the balls to ask Ayrton Senna. And that's one thing that people must also remember. Jackie Stewart probably made more money, and in fact he made more money as a commentator for ABC World of Sport, I think it was at the time, in America, because he did all their motorsport for almost a decade, and he was very, very, very well respected and became a sort of a brand magnet for Ford, Rolex, etc. So, you know, Sir Jackie's a special guy, and he was a fantastic commentator. Well, he wasn't even a commentator, he was an interviewer. He really attacked Ayrton like I expect journalists to. So, you know, I have a very soft spot for Sir Jackie Stewart, and, you know, the only thing I hope is that one day him and Sir Lewis Hamilton will have a beer together and bury the hatchet.
Yeah, and I think this is always, it can be kind of blown out of proportion by media, various people reporting, you know, what Jackie Stewart says, what Hamilton says in response. But, you know, Hamilton's not going to say, oh yeah, I think I'm probably not one of the greatest ever, is he? He's always going to, you know, fight his corner, and Jackie Stewart's got the right to fight his corner as well. So I think it is a little bit of a storm in a teacup, as is this whole debate. I think that there's no conclusive answer to it. And, you know, people will, as you say, Ben, will always have their preferences. But I don't think that in Formula One, more than any other sport, that we can ever truly have an answer, because of just the differences in car performance, the differences in technology, and the differences in era that vary so dramatically from any other sport. But let's move on to something.
Yeah. Having said that, I just want to say, though, that I think we can all agree that the real GOAT is Taki Inoue.
I think that maybe does seal the debate going forward.
Alex Caffey. I'll go Alex Caffey.
Well, we could just sit here for 15 minutes just referencing, like, humorously bad Formula One drivers. Or we could get on to someone who's trying to probably avoid such a fate, and that is Alex Albon. He's having a tough time at Red Bull. And it seems that with every passing Nico Hülkenberg substitute appearance, that pressure is only mounting. Ben, I'll come to you first. Just how dire is the situation for Albon in terms of keeping his seat? And can you see him turning it around before the end of the season? Or do you think he'll even get until then?
He can definitely still turn it around. As long as there's races left in the season, like, literally all he would need would be a win on his own merit, which is a big ask right now, and that's different from just a win in general. But a win on his own merit, I think, would save his seat for next year. But from what we've seen through all the races so far this year, there's no chance of that happening. He is so far behind Max. He is making that Red Bull look like a midfield car, which it isn't. It might not be the Mercedes, but it's not a midfield car. And I think he's quite rightly, everyone is sort of speculating on who's going to take his seat, because it just seems like there's better options out there. That, at the same time, I do feel bad for him, because he seems like a really nice guy. He has had some bad luck you know, his championship standing would be better if, you know, he hadn't crashed in Austria. He could have done had the Brazil last year. He's had a few sort of things that definitely weren't his fault that have you know, will sort of be neglected in the history books. But yeah, if you're driving for Red Bull, you don't have to be Daniel Ricciardo next to Max, but you have to be at least a wingman. And I said this point about Pierre Gasly the first time before he got dropped. I said, Red Bull, that number two seat, that guy has to be a rear gunner. And Pierre at the time was a rear runner. He just wasn't close. And that's Alex right now. He's a rear runner too. So unless that changes, as harsh as it is to say, they have to look elsewhere.
The really interesting aspect of this to me is that obviously it's been referenced numerous times that this Red Bull is really difficult to drive. And even Christian Horner this week kind of said that some of those drivability issues will hopefully be resolved with the RB16B that they're going to race next season. So I think that the extent to which that is true kind of can determine kind of how good or bad a job Albon is doing. But to be consistently over half a second behind him behind his teammate Max Verstappen in qualifying, it is simply not good enough. And I doubt that there are any margins across the entire grid that are as big as that. Obviously, Verstappen is one of the best drivers on the grid and one of the fastest qualifiers. But I can't see someone else who potentially isn't as liked and as kind of amiable as Alex Albon kind of getting the same amount of slack. He's a young driver, of course, but you know, Pierre Gasly lost his seat within half a season when he was putting those kind of performances. And Albon is now kind of approaching almost a year and a half in the seat, delivering the same thing. So I do think that it's difficult to kind of make arguments for him continuing if the performances don't get any better. Obviously, there are some circumstances beyond his control. As you mentioned, you know, he could have had two more podiums had he not had incidents with Lewis Hamilton. But a big part of his driving that I'm starting to really notice is the amount of incidents that he gets himself into, and you know, whether or not it was his fault when it came in those collisions with Hamilton. I think a lot of people would say it probably was Hamilton's fault. That doesn't explain why he's kind of getting into incidents regularly, even, you know, as recently as kind of taking Daniel Kvyat's front wing off at the Nürburgring. So I think there are definitely some questions for him to answer.
Well, I've thought he'd been under threat throughout the year. I thought they'd have dropped him a lot earlier, to be honest with you. So, yeah, credit to Red Bull for the patience. But at the same time, look, word is that Gasly did something bad, and we really have to snoop around to find out that's actually pissed off Red Bull. Now, what that something bad is, Ben, get on it. You know, it's like, I don't know. What could he have done that's bad? You know, did he stab someone in the Red Bull factory? Did he sleep with the Red Bull boss's wife? What is bad that's not going to get him a Formula One drive? You know, end of the day, Alex hasn't cut it. He's a really nice guy. But, you know, the best of the best aren't really nice guys, honestly. Yes, to their family and friends, they are nice guys, you know. But to be honest, he just hasn't delivered. Whether he's a nice guy or not, I don't think comes into play. You've got to deliver. And Max needs someone like Valtteri Bottas, like a wingman that's there, solid. When he slips up, picks up the points. And I don't think Alex is anywhere near that at the moment. And I'm just fascinated where this sudden Red Bull patience has come from. Ben?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that I found it interesting that particular rumor, I guess we'd call it, about him not getting along with the team came from Paul de Resta. Because I'm not sure whether it gives it more credence or less credence, the fact that Paul de Resta himself was known as being sort of not particularly liked by the people that worked with him in the team. You guys tell me.
Yeah, that's I've heard something to that effect. But yeah, but you know, I think it's the same thing, Ben. You know, it's like being a driver, you've got to win the hearts and souls of the team. You know, when you watch great drivers among their teams, which I've had the privilege to do, people are in awe of them. Not just the fans, the team, the actual team. Every time the guy walks past, they step aside and they look up and they almost genuflect. That's how it is, because these guys are so, so good. And I think just Alex doesn't have that, and I think Max does. And that's the big, big problem. I fear for anybody who's going to be Max's partner, to be honest. That's the real story. Who can actually sort of even be close to Max, let alone beat him or push him?
With Gasly, I remember at the time that there were reports that he potentially wasn't as kind of malleable in terms of his setup, and he wasn't willing to kind of work with the Red Bull team as much as they perhaps wanted to get the most out of the car, and he kind of wanted it to suit him. And I remember those reports coming out at the time, and obviously that's kind of been resurfaced recently. But it is interesting to show how much those relationships are important, as you say. And I think that's got to be a difficult thing for Albon when he knows that the team is built around Max Verstappen, and he knows that he's only there to do a number two job. And you know, as much as they do like him, he knows that, you know, any of the good new parts are going to go to Verstappen. All of the kind of car development is going to be built around Verstappen's preferences. So it is a really difficult situation to be in. And obviously for much of the season, they said that he didn't actually have the same parts. And, you know, I think he does now, but he potentially, you know, maybe that the opportunity is already gone by the time he actually gets the opportunity to compete on the same terms. But let's move on to our next topic. And that is the situation at Alfa Romeo. Mick Schumacher is obviously leading the Formula 2 standings. He is obviously the son of Michael Schumacher and was due to get his first outing in a Formula 1, well, his first outing kind of in a Formula 1 session at the Nürburgring with Alfa Romeo, but he obviously had that kind of taken from him due to the adverse weather conditions. The rumours were that potentially Raikkonen was going to be his partner next season, but then, you know, if you actually look at the results between Giovinazzi and Raikkonen, it's actually pretty close, and I wouldn't say that either of them are kind of clearly the quicker at the moment. So, firstly, kind of, if Mick is coming into Alfa Romeo next season, is he partnering Raikkonen? Is he partnering Giovinazzi? Or do you think, could you even see them going with you know, promoting both him and Ilott to Alfa Romeo if Raikkonen decides to step aside, and if they just don't see a future with Giovinazzi? I'll go to you, Paul, first.
Well, I think Giovinazzi's, the writing's been on the wall for him for a while. I'd venture that they gave him this year to see if he's up for it. And he's not beating Kimi. He should be beating Kimi like Leclerc is beating Vettel, like Albon's beating, how Max is beating Albon, how Lewis is beating Bottas. That's what Giovinazzi's got to be doing if he was looking to get promoted or to stay in Formula One, at least, because he's got nowhere else to go. Ferrari have Sainz there next year. So Kimi, it looks like he's staying. I mean, you know, which I find a totally absurd. But anyway, he's staying. Let's go with the premise that he's staying. Now they've got three really hot young guns in Formula Two, and this is Ferrari. So what do they do? Mix a shoe in. I don't care what anybody says. I'll eat this microphone and you can video it if Mick doesn't get that drive. Seriously, I think everyone's made all the right noises. It's just a matter of time. Can Giovinazzi salvage his career? Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, let's see what he does in the last six races. But I don't think he's, you know, he's had enough time. You either, you know, you get in and you do it. You don't take forever to do it. That's not how modern Formula One works.
I think you're definitely right in that Giovinazzi hasn't taken his opportunity. But I do agree with you that the idea of Raikkonen sticking around for another season in was an unperforming car, and you know, his performances haven't exactly been that impressive either. So, you know, I would be leaning to potentially, you know, depending on the super license situation, because obviously they need to finish in the top three to earn the necessary points. But, you know, depending on what Haas are thinking, whether they want to promote Ilott, and you also, of course, have Robert Schwartzman as well, who could still finish in the top three. I would be tempted to go with a kind of all young lineup and kind of work around those two drivers moving forward. But Ben, what's your take on it? Are you surprised that Raikkonen's considering another year, or what would you expect to see Alfa Romeo do?
Well, I mean, Kimi says the that F1's a hobby for him, and you know, Alfa Romeo is willing to keep indulging his hobby. I don't blame him for sticking around, even though he's clearly not the driver he once was. In terms of, so like Paul, basically, I agree, Kimi's going to be there, and it seems like Giovinazzi, the thing about Giovinazzi is he's not in the same position as Kimi, because Kimi will be there for whatever young driver comes in. he would be expected to sort of take him under their under his wing, as much as Kimi can take anyone under his wing. He doesn't talk much, but you know, be that sort of at least be an example, to set an example for that young driver to come in. Whereas Giovinazzi's not going to be able to do that, and as Paul said as well, like, he hasn't really earned that sort of position because he's not really beating Kimi. He's running it close, but you shouldn't be running it close against a 41-year-old driver who's doing this as a hobby. You should be smashing him, and that doesn't bode well for a seat that you want to give to a driver that ideally can move to Ferrari at some point. I think we can all agree that whether you think Giovinazzi deserves to stay on the F1 grid or not, he's done nothing to prove he deserves to be in a top seat on the F1 grid, which in theory Ferrari would have for him at some point. So yeah, I think you have to definitely move on to someone else, and that someone does seem to be Mick. I mean, it's just, you've obviously got the fact that he's leading the championship, so that right there would end the story if that ends up being the thing that he does win the championship. But even setting that aside, whether he finished second, third, or slightly lower, he has proven his worth in F2 this year with his results, and the name does mean a lot, and the marketing that comes with that. You know, Alfa Romeo does need to make money, and they're going to get the exact same payout from Ferrari for having an academy driver with Mick that they would with Giovinazzi, plus the chance to sell an awful lot of caps and t-shirts with Mick's name on it.
It's a logical pairing because Mick has really hit some home runs now in the end of the season, which is the way he's been throughout his career. You know, if you look at it, Formula 3, he wasn't, you know, he got in there, worked, got better, won the championship. Same things with Formula 2. He's just been getting better and better and better, and he deserves Formula 1, not because he's Mick Schumacher. He just deserves it. And if Kimi stays around, I mean, there's such a poetic justice to that. I mean, you know, Kimi is the guy who replaced Michael at Ferrari in 2007. Kimi's the last guy who won a Ferrari World Championship, taking that, you know, there's so much, that it's beautiful. You couldn't script it. If you scripted this, they would say, listen, this is too cheesy. But there you have it. How beautiful is that? You have Kimi, the man who zerped the guy at Ferrari, coaching Michael, who's in a wheelchair, coaching his son to become the champion for Ferrari. I mean, is that a movie? It's like a movie. What was that movie? The Champ. You know. So anyway, that's our version of The Champ, and I think it's beautiful. I think it's, you know, it's just a great story for us.
And that's all we have time for this week. Thank you very much for listening. And as ever, if you want to get in touch with the show, please contact us on podcast@grandprix247.com. You can also check out all the stories we're working on at grandprix247.com. And you can follow us on Twitter @GrandPrix247. If you like the show, please do recommend it to a friend and give us a like on iTunes or Spotify. We'll be back next week to preview the Portuguese Grand Prix. Thank you. Bye-bye.